You want me to get the dinner down?
That damn phone will ring all day and all night.
Oh, we thought of taking it off the hook.
Norman.
It doesn't know you're going to do that.
All the buttons on hold.
But if you do that, then the people that you're trying to try to get you don't get you.
That's true.
You have a choice.
The telephone is there to answer.
Edgar Berman. This is Norman Sherman.
Norman Jewish.
What do you think? We're doing a little tape recording. The vice president for the...
Tell him I'm feeling like hell.
You don't look bad at all.
No.
You don't look like you're feeling like hell.
That's my largest longest phone bill is to Edgar Berman. Trying to get Wang looking
Edgar
out of him.
Who's Edgar Berman?
The doctor.
What? Oh, the doctor.
Vice president of the line
event. On 02. What are you doing, son? Look at what you're doing to your mom?
Actually, I'd like to move this.
Would you like a chair?
Well, right beside him,
yeah.
Cornflakes.
Yeah, actually, I could sit here.
You can move this so that you can put the thing together.
That's right.
You really don't care for comments on this stuff.
Oh,
just so you get a feel.
No, it was really good. Just sporadically, nothing long. In between, take a half hour, then I'd quit and go on out and went out and took it. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. A couple of times a year, hold on a minute. God almighty, the damn telephone
here
wasn't all over this place. Hold on. Yeah, hold him on.
No, hold
I got
on.
Another son on the other line.
Hold on.
All is well. Yeah.
Father and all of this, too.
Yeah.
George Washington didn't have that trouble.
That's right. He was the father of his country.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
No.
Testing. Good.
Yeah,
we're going to be busy on the cat on the tin roof.
The first time I came out,
We'd be at about 10 o'clock, I guess, isn't that 10, 10
30? It's pretty much true. Take a look at any of the Senate offices over here.
Oh, we can't make it 9:30. We gotta be in Milwaukee that night.
And the procurement, stealing, theft, and
yeah,
otherwise...
That's true. You never have your own kind of...
That'd be about at the earliest that we could possibly make it, if we can.
He's a crook. He's never been caught.
Julie Brown?
Yeah, I got him.
Oh, he's still on it.
I got you some other church pictures today.
That's
good. Which I'll send up to you tomorrow.
Well,
maybe I'll pick them up later.
Hey, I'll only be ready till, you know, if you could go back a little later in the morning, maybe I'd have them, but I don't.
Okay.
Well, we'll do our best. Your dad's got to be in Kansas City and St. Louis and Milwaukee on Saturday before he arrives in Minneapolis. Well, I think somebody has done. I got so many people worrying about what I'm doing right now that it's just almost a joke. It's going to work out all right. How'd you do? Well, that's great. I got to thinking about that cover picture.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you like that one that's on that pamphlet, that placard of ours?
Which one is that? The unity
thing.
Without, take the finger off. We don't need that. Just the head part.
Well, I tell you, I haven't told Ralph this. I've let them go ahead and...
you
the
sure
cover,
have.
But I've gotten people looking for some other covers in case we have to pull up it shortly. But I'll get you a copy of that, too.
Alright.
But that is the best picture. It really is.
I wonder who took that.
I don't know. But
Marty Nordstrom, that's who it is.
Is he pushing for money?
Marty.
Huh?
Marty.
Which one?
Marty Mims?
No.
What is
not
it?
The
what is
unity
it? Campaign picture, an action picture?
Nordstrom, we got it out of New York.
But it's got a sort of a three quarters profile. It's much, it doesn't show just nose and eyeball.
Oh.
It's better. Really,
the
yes.
Best one is the pretty.
I'll get it.
Beautiful, handsome picture with a smile.
You like that one best, huh?
I sure do. That's what you should look the sexiest part for all time.
Sexy. I want to tell you something. You don't need to worry about Planned Parenthood with me around. It's a dead cinch. And I mean dead.
The dead.
Well, let's not get this thing out.
Thank God for breakfast food. I've eaten more damn breakfast food. I've lived off of beer and cheese and crackers and breakfast food for years. That's why I like high public office, Judith. You have such wonderful time. You have so much fun for all the things. Time for all the fun you can enjoy. I don't know what I'd do without saltines and cheddar cheese. About three nights a week, I'd come home here at 1 o'clock at night and sit around here all by myself and decide I haven't had any dinner. Then I say, yeah, Mrs. H, she gets worried when I do that. I lie to her. I tell her I had a big, nice dinner, you know.
I called NBC today, talked to the Huntley Brinkley people just a second time.
They were
to worry them.
They were over there at night.
Yes.
Of all the places to come over to a saloon.
Told him I wanted a copy of the film. What'd you forget?
Well, another thing. You ought to call up the Washington Post. That's what you ought to call up. That is the damnedest scandal sheet I've ever seen.
Well, what's with them?
Did you see that California poll they had?
With a headline on it?
Kennedy has wide lead.
Vice President jumped from 6 to 28%. Bobby Kennedy dropped from 32 to 31%, and the headline says RFK
has
wide lead
really?
In California.
Really?
How do you like that? In 1 month, he drops 1 point. He
I
jumps
22 points.
And the headline says RFK has, and it's a 31 to 28% lead.
Well,
you know.
And Johnson has 6 below, which means that I'd get most of those.
Yeah, sure you would.
And I'm not even on the ballot.
Yeah,
not even on the ballot.
That was some headline. I read that around.
The other day they had, when I was 41 to 27 in the Gallup poll, it says, Rockefeller gains on Nixon. Banner headline. I want to tell you something.
I will call the Post. I'll call
Ben Bradley is an old Kennedy man, you know.
He's an old Humphrey man.
He's damn old as far as I'm concerned. Nothing will please me more than to get that nomination. I hope to God they don't ever have a Washington Post reporter. I'd like to have the whole damn bunch over in France. Nope. Oh, they take it off.
My God. That's our tape.
Is it our tape?
That's your tape, and this is none yet.
Guys, gotta be so careful.
Play it back, I want to raise. Well, why don't we start
right, shall
this
we?
So that you...
Okay. Now, where are we now?
Just turn
well,
them.
He just, these are
these
the
are, this is the prologue.
I'll let him do it.
And this is The Man for All People. It goes with a title.
Yes.
The Man for All People.
Look at that.
Isn't that a great...
Isn't that a wonderful picture?
Isn't that a great one? Man for
yes.
All People. Man for All People.
You know where that picture was taken? In Birmingham.
Well, this one here?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. When I was down, I stopped at a playground in Birmingham, Alabama. And I had broken my wrist. And I was showing the kids there. They were all out playing touch football.
Mm-hmm.
They're such. Look at those fine-looking faces.
Look at those faces. Aren't they marvelous?
Aren't they, though? You know, you talk... That's not despair. Look at that.
No,
they're
no.
They're so happy.
No, there's no despair there.
Look at here. What we have. All those youngsters reaching out up here. I was trying to figure out where that was. Can't remember. I thought I could spot a face, but I would know. But look at how happy they are. Look at that young lady there. And look at this dear old lady here. The young and the old mixed together.
They really are in there.
Yeah. Are you all set?
Yeah, I'm all set.
Now, we love you, Hubert. Oh, yes, we do. Isn't that something? You know, that looks just like, look at there. The old man's got his movie camera out. And he's getting those pictures. He's waving at you at the same time.
It's a great picture.
It is a great picture.
Really,
that was going out to Waverly,
yeah.
I think, after the 64 nomination.
It's really good. All right, next. You want me to turn them over this way?
Yeah.
Oh, these are the cartoons. I had a good time with a cartoonist the other night. A lot of them were drawing cartoons, and I was signing them up.
I understand you torpedoed a boat, too.
Oh, that, did you, have you heard that tape?
No.
Why,
but
that's the most fantastic story, that Washington Post.
Well, it was really a UPI guy who did you in, and then they...
Well, even after he did us in, why, we called a fellow back and went over the whole thing with him, and... Dick Valeriani
was...
Valeriani said that, you know, there was nothing there, and...
I told the Post there was nothing there because they called me about 11 o'clock.
Valeriani said it couldn't possibly be used in the broadcast media. It was too far
from okay, now this is where he...
Okay,
really
here's where we really start. And,
yes.
And this is the beginning. And what I'd like to start with really are your parents.
Yes.
Your father
and mother. And father. And you can see my father was a rather good-looking man. He had dark black hair. Mother's was a... rather petite, small-boned woman, and very delicate features. And they were married in Lily, South Dakota. My mother was the daughter of Norwegian immigrant parents. My father had come to Lily, South Dakota to run a drugstore. And he had part ownership in a store. Prior to that, he had graduated pharmacy school in Minneapolis. I believe it was the Drew Pharmacy School, D-R-E-W.
And he was from a farming family, wasn't he?
Yes.
Father... He really broke out of the mold, in
yes.
a sense.
Well, all of them did. My father's family lived at Elk River, Minnesota. Dad was born in Albany, Oregon. But the climate there was not conducive to his health, according to what Dad told me. And his family moved back to Minnesota, which was really native country for them. My grandfather, my dad's father, was the son of a pioneer that had come to Minnesota in 1849, just at the time of statehood for Minnesota, from Connecticut. the Humphrey family has been in the American scene since the early 1600s, settling early in Massachusetts and Connecticut, Dudley, Massachusetts. The records show Dudley, Massachusetts. Their family were way back. I have a genealogy of the family. Members in the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, Mexican War, Civil War. It's an early American family, primarily Welsh and English stock. By the way, when I was going to Maine, did you show me that Hubert Horatio Humphrey name?
Yes.
You ought to get that
for
in here, because the name Humphrey is partly Scandinavian. From the Norman, it went into the from the Norman and Scandinavians coming in down into Central Europe and into Normandy and then over to Britain. Well, Dad was one. There was Uncle Harry, Uncle John, my father, his sister Estelle, and his younger brother Fortis. There were five in that family: Harry, John, Hubert, Estelle, and Fortis. And they were the sons and daughters, the sons and daughter of John Wadsworth Humphrey. Living in Elk River, Minnesota, my father went to grade school there. Subsequently, he went to high school in both Dawson and St. James, Minnesota, and finished high school in Minnesota.
What made him decide to go into pharmacy? I mean, which is really a break. I mean,
when his older brother was going to the University of Minnesota, the whole family went away from the farm. Uncle Harry went to the University of Minnesota, as did Uncle John. They both were good students, and they were living near the campus. And after my father completed high school, he came up to live with his brothers.
I see.
And while he was there, he went to a pharmacy school to learn to be a pharmacist. Uncle John was a chemist.
Oh, that might have been.
And my Uncle Harry was a botanist.
Oh, I see.
He became a very famed botanist. He was the chief plant pathologist for the Department of Agriculture here for some 20 years. Mm-hmm. He was a very fine scholar. And all of his children, by the way, were, with one or two exceptions, botanists, about four or five in his family. My Uncle John never quite completed the University of Minnesota. He left a month before graduation because he was offered a very big job as the chief chemist for the U.S. Steel in Minnesota. He quit that after he had some kind of a laboratory explosion. He was a very interesting man. The whole Humphrey family, very interesting tribe. All very independent. All going their own way. All very much free thinkers. Uncle John decided that he wanted to be a chemist. He was a chemist. He worked for the steel company. He had some, there was some kind of an explosion in which he was injured. He quit it. He went on to work for the government for a while. It's something I've forgotten now, some department. Then later on, he went out to Kentucky. He went into finance business. He once owned a steel factory. He was the inventor, so to speak, of the market basket stamp, the green market basket stamp before the gold bond stamps. He and my dad were in business. They had a wall office in Wall Street. Uncle John
was on Wall Street.
Well, he just belonged with Uncle John up there.
I see.
And they lost everything in it. I remember having those stamps when I was a little boy. They were boxes at least 5 foot high and 10 foot long, about to huge big crates filled with these green market basket stamps.
Ahead
of their time.
This is like the
stamp. 19,
like the stamp
was,
stuff.
Yeah,
now.
Like the blue, like the gold, you know, like the S&H stamp,
yeah,
the gold bond and all that.
Right, yeah.
Well, they had that idea back in 1916.
Funny.
My dad also sold life insurance for the New York Life Insurance Company. He had an office at Watertown. This was just, I don't remember when all this stuff happened, but
the publisher of this book is in the New York Life Insurance Building.
Yeah, well, that's, is that right?
That funny?
And Uncle John's, after all of this episode, he became the head of the Department of Economics at the University of Kentucky. He never even had a college degree. He was a poet. He wrote beautiful poetry. He invented the potato picker. He was one of the contributing inventors to the dial on the Nickelodeon where you can pick the number, the record that
oh,
you
yes.
want.
Oh, yes.
He
sure.
worked on that.
Oh, my God.
With the Wurlitzer people. He had all kinds of things. For example, in farmhouses, he had these little boxes that you could put in the ceiling, and when there was a fire, it would ring an alarm. It would work through the telephone system. He was a genius man. He became a public accountant and an excellent one. He helped organize big cotton cooperative, and he was one of those that helped organize a big bus line. Merged several bus companies in the southern part of the United States. He was a rabid Republican. My father
Keep
was
that
a
quiet.
Oh no, Owen. Uncle Harry was a Christian Scientist and a reader in the church, and yet he was a great scientist himself and botanist. He could speak seven languages. He used to teach in the Department of Agriculture Graduate School. He helped me go through the university. I never would have been able to do it without his encouragement and his help. He wrote like Scrip. I have letters from him. They're absolutely amazing, beautiful. He built his home at Cabin John out here, Rammed Earth, which is written up, in the construction. He's really a fantastic people. Well,
was your father involved with him?
My father went on out and became a businessman, and he started in these small drug stores, and he worked his way up from this little town of Lilly. He married Mom there. She was the daughter of a good Norwegian farmer, a large Scandinavian family. Dad went on from there to a little town called Wallace, South Dakota, where I was
born.
Mm-hmm. No, he went from there first to Granite Falls, Minnesota. That's right, Granite Falls, Minnesota. From Lilly to Granite Falls, Minnesota, because the man that he was in business with at Lilly wanted to open another store at Granite Falls, and then Dad went with him. That store burned down. And I've heard my mother tell me about how terribly disappointed Dad was that all that he had was involved in that business, and he was just about at the end of his line. He just despaired. But I must also tell you that Dad was such an interesting man. You know, Mother was born in a Lutheran family, and she was family were very religious. My father was reading Robert Ingersoll and the Book of Mormon, and all these things that Mother just couldn't understand. She didn't realize what kind of a fellow she got mixed up with, I guess. Well, anyway, Dad went on and to a little town called Wallace, South Dakota, where I was born. My brother Ralph was born in Granite Falls. And then he went to a little town called Dolan, South Dakota, where I went through high school.
Yes, I know.
And grade school.
But what about Wallace? Tell me a little what they told you about Wallace. I know you were
well,
too
small.
Well,
I was
small.
So small,
yeah,
but
what did they say about Wallace? What kind of...
Well, it was a small little country town.
It was smaller than Dolan.
Yes,
it?
About 100 people or so,
yeah.
Maybe a couple of hundred. And Dad had a drugstore there.
And this is Wallace, and
yeah.
And is that the drugstore?
No,
this is
Dolan.
That's in Dolan,
and
this is Wallace,
yeah, Wallace,
right.
And I don't know which one of these buildings. I think it's this corner building right here. Yes, it was, because I know this is where they told me. I was born above that building, second story.
Yeah.
And old Dr. Ely was the doctor that brought me into the world. And I met him years later. I went up to the 75th anniversary of Wallace one time when I was a senator. I always
oh, really?
Go back to all those places.
Yeah.
And nobody ever wants me to except me. I always go anyway.
What did the doctor say?
Well, he just told, they told me about when I was a little boy, that how one time I had marched in a parade. My mother couldn't find me, and they looked for me, and I had a little red coat on. They used to call me Pinky when I was a little guy.
Your complexion, yeah.
Because I was ruddy-faced, and I'd like red jackets, and I had this little red coat on, and the Norwegian, it was a Norwegian community. On May 17th is Norway Independence Day.
Oh, I see.
So I would always march in those parades.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, mother used to say that not only was I born above a drugstore, but I'd be down there in the store, and I'd have a little bottle of milk in it, and I'd lie right on my back on the floor and just put that bottle up there and drink that milk out. Well, I wish that I hadn't taken the time to get my aunts to put down a lot of the stuff that they've told me, because one of them now is senile and can't do it. But they told me about that when I lived at Wallace, my father one time came home, and I'd been a bad boy. I'd gone around and taken a little stick and pushed a hole in the windows in the basement because I wanted to let the mice out. There were some mice down there. And my mother had gotten after me, and I climbed under the porch. under the, you know, we have these little steps going on up, and I'd gotten under there, and Mother couldn't get in, didn't want to get under there after me anyway, and I was hiding under there. And when my father came home, my mother told Dad that I'd been a bad boy and that I was hiding under the porch, and so he came in to get me. And when he stuck his head underneath there, I said, "Daddy, is Mama after you too?" And so I got out of getting my, out of getting a whipping that night. Well, I don't remember much more about Wallace. We moved from there when I was age.
How old were you there in that picture?
I must have been about 4 years, 3 or 4 years old there.
Well, then
that was taken
this
in
was
Wallace.
Just a, that was in Wallace.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right. Right.
Yes, that was taken in Watertown, South Dakota. That picture. That was near Wallace. That was
I
the
see.
County seat.
I see.
And
that's a good picture.
That is a cute little picture.
It really is.
Yeah. Then we moved to Dolan in 1916.
And that was
I was 5 years
and
old.
That's where you lived then.
No, this is the drugstore.
That's the drugstore.
Yeah,
I mean,
right there.
Yeah.
That was the building there. That
yeah.
Was, and the next door was a bank, and a hardware store. A bank on this side and a hardware store. And this was our drugstore right there.
Was it a one street town?
No. Well, Dolan was a kind of a nice little town, and it is yet. But my father was very active in Dolan. That town was, I can just reminisce with you by the hour about that town. I remember everything about it. It was really a town of fine people. The names of the people come back to me, and they're just remarkable people. Old Dr. Sherwood, the country doctor there, and Dr. Williams, there were two doctors in that town. And I remember even when Dr. Sherwood used to have a buggy and horse and go out to the country, I can recall him coming into the drugstore with his kit or his case and fill up all the pills right out of our prescription case, and he prescribed through our store. My dad and Dr. Sherwood were intimate, close friends, and Dr. Sherwood could take care of 99% of the ills better than most doctors can today.
Yeah.
He did it through, he went any hour of the night. He never seemed to ever get sick. I remember when people were dying off by the dozens from the influenza in 1918, which I almost did myself. He was on the road day and night taking care of people. Dr. Williams was another doctor in town. He was a younger doctor. He was also very good. There was a man, a family by the name of Riske, R-I-S-K-E, A.J. Riske, who was a quite well-to-do, we thought. And he had a beautiful home. There were a lot of lovely homes, the LaBrie family, the Garthwaite family, the James family, the Albright family, the Garretts. There were just so many. Mrs.
What about,
Woods.
What about your friends at the time, your own boyhood friends?
Oh, I had lots of friends. My best friend was Julian Hart, who was up here at Yale University. I'm going to try to take Julian out to Dolan for the commencement. He was the son of Reverend Albert Hart, H-A-R-T-T, of the Methodist Church. And
well, that was the man who was really an influence on you. I
yes, Reverend Albert Hart,
yeah.
Very much so.
In what way was he an influence?
Well, he was a very intelligent man. He was Eastern educated. We, you know, we knew that he was a different kind of minister than many that you would get. Even though there was another one there, Reverend Vernon, that was very good, and Reverend Wilkinson. I remember these. We were very close to the Methodist Church. My father used to teach in Sunday school there, and I was a member of the Epworth League, and a member of the Boy Scout troop.
When did you join the Boy Scouts?
So when I was old enough, I was a Lone Scout before I was a Boy Scout.
Lone Scout?
They don't have them anymore, but
no,
before that was
what is that?
That was an organization that had its headquarters in Chicago. And you could be a scout and get a manual, and you could do it all by yourself.
Oh.
And we didn't have a scout troop at that time, and I always had a big imagination. I always dreamed that I was trapping some big animal or something like that, and I'd go out night after night by myself, you know, and set traps.
How old were you then?
Oh, I must have been about 8, 9 years old.
I was nature counselor, Boy Scout Troop 281.
I always said about Reverend Albert Hart being a very good influence on us, but there were others. Albert Payne, old Al Payne, P-A-I-N-E, he just died here a couple of years ago. Bless his heart. I thought he was an old man when I was a little boy, and he died at age 96 or 97.
Okay.
And I used to go visit him when I'd go out to here in South Dakota. He was in the rest home out there. And he was so bright at 95 and 96. He was sharp as a tack, and he was interested in politics. And he was a postmaster. And he got to be postmaster 2 or 3 times. He was postmaster under Woodrow Wilson. He got to be postmaster under Franklin Roosevelt. And then he got to be postmaster again under, I think, Harry Truman. He was one of the few Democrats. Dad and Al Payne are about the only Democrats around town. It was almost illegal to be a Democrat.
And your dad became mayor.
He was city council member and mayor. They built a big hotel, a nice hotel, a thoroughly modern hotel in that town with a beautiful dining room and a lovely lobby. And Dad and Al Payne and Art James, they went and bought the furniture. They went away, you know, they were young fellows and they were active. And that, of course, the hotel went broke after a while, like everything else did.
Yeah.
People nowadays don't understand things
that.
The South Dakota State Bank that was run by Mr. Brown, I forgot his first name now, it'll come to me. Mr. Brown was one of Dad's close friends. And then Mr. Gross was the president of the Security State Bank. The Security State Bank was right here in that corner.
Mm-hmm.
And right up the street a little ways was the State Bank. And then the department store right next to us, the general store, was run by Mr. Johnson. And Edward Johnson, his second son, was one of my close friends who died when he was a junior in high school from peritonitis. He was a bright young fellow, wonderful boy. Bob Johnson, his older brother, is now up in Providence, Rhode Island. No, he's still a friend of mine.
What kind of boyhood was it?
Wonderful boyhood. Just great. You know, I've talked about this so much that everybody's sick of it.
I'm not sick of it. I haven't heard it.
The boyhood was centered around the local business institutions, the church and the school. We had three churches in town. We had what we call the Christian church, like the one the president attends,
mm-hmm.
the Methodist church, and the Catholic church. There weren't too many Catholics there, but the church served a large parish there. There was, interestingly enough, in our city, I think there was just one Jewish family. That was Mr. Abe Schrader. He was a very good friend of my father's, and I can remember that on the Jewish holidays that we would we'd always get a chance to go over to Schrader's home, and then the High Holy Days, why I can remember that Schrader's would close their store. That's my first, you know.
And you got practice wearing the yarmulke, say,
yeah,
at
was,
their
you know,
wedding.
Interesting. It's a very interesting thing. I never heard much about organized labor. We didn't know much about that, except from the railroad workers. We knew that the trainmen and the conductors, I learned of Negroes when I was in Dolan, because the Negro workers came up and built the highways, dump trucks. And I used to go out and ride the truck with those fellows every night after school when I was a little boy, and then I'd sell them all kinds of newspapers. They didn't let them read them, but they were my friends, and then they would buy newspapers from me. I had a newspaper route from the day I was 6 years of age until I was 19.
Dolan paper?
I started my own bank account when I was 10 years old. No, I sold the Minneapolis Tribune, the Minneapolis Journal, St. Paul Pioneer Press, the St. Paul Dispatch, the Chicago Ledger, the Chicago Herald Examiner, the Denver Post, the Omaha Examiner, and the Milwaukee Journal. And anytime anybody'd start competition, I'd buy them out. And I had all the magazines in my father's store. I sold everything like all the Curtis Publishing Company stuff. This Ladies Home Journal, the Saturday Evening Post, and the Boy's Life, yeah.
Yeah.
I sold all those magazines.
Did you work in the drugstore too?
Sure, I
worked. What did you do in the drugstore?
Everything, from sweeping out to cleaning the basement.
Did you have an ice cream parlor too?
Yes, a big soda fountain and a big ice cream parlor. My goodness, we had in Dolan, we had a, we call it the Bluebird ice cream parlor. I remember that.
Bluebird, I think.
We had, it was very pretty. And on the second floor, my father had all the phonographs. He had the Edison phonograph. And all the big records, I can remember that. And I also, he used to have his own little multilith printing press, multigraph.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to set the type for that, and we'd send out newsletters all around to the farmers. And
what kind of newsletters?
You know, a letter every month that we'd did about Humphrey's Drugstore and what the bargain.
Oh, I see.
Then we used to have a little enclosure that we'd put with it that was published by the Rexall Drug Company.
Oh, yeah.
And we had our calendars, and we had the old family almanac. I can remember all of that. I've got a lot of those trinkets around here. And I kept my own ledger. My father made me keep books when I started at 10 years of age.
You mean for your news book?
For my news account.
Yeah.
And I had a banking account and a checking account. I used to write checks
checking,
for 25
really?
Cents. And it must have driven the banker half nuts. But I lost all my money in the banks. I remember I lost $145 in savings in the Security State Bank and $100 and some in the other.
It hit you too. I mean, it wasn't
everybody was rubbed
out. But I mean, you know, you had your own.
We never
account.
Had any bank in our town. I don't remember a bank being operative from 1926 to 1934. 1933.
I mean, there just wasn't a
there
bank.
There were no banks.
Right.
We did money out of, we did business out of our own vault, and most of it was out of cream checks and cash. You know, there, we never had a crop in South Dakota after 1927 till 1938.
Yeah.
11 years. No crops.
My God, how did people live?
Now, well, let me tell you, it was rough. My father canceled all the accounts of the people that owed him money. I used to go out with Dad when I was a boy at Dolan, South Dakota, and he'd teach farmers how to vaccinate their hogs. He and I'd go on out together.
Where did he learn from?
He just learned.
Well, he just learned.
He had to learn. He went down and learned from the Anchor Serum Company down at Salisbury's at Charles City, Iowa, where they just had that tornado through. And, well, I, you know, I even dream. I actually can tell you that even last night I dreamed about that drugstore, Dolan, South Dakota.
Is that right?
I can remember the displays as plain as I see your face right now. We used to have Clenso products, Clenso toothpaste, Clenso, mouthwash and stuff. And I can see the little octagon tables that we used to build that stuff up on. And I can still see where I used to walk through where we had what we called the proprietaries, the Tanilac, the Lydia Pinkham's compound, the Peruna, Dr. Nervine and Dr. Miles Nervine and stuff. That we used to have a little, like a hallway, a passageway on both sides. We'd have these bottles. And I can still see walking back there, and the Dad's vault would be at the end of that hall. Then downstairs we'd go into the basement. I see that just as plain now as if
and the drugstore was kind of a focus, wasn't it?
Yeah, I lived there.
I mean, no, I mean people came.
Oh,
all
sure, and we practically lived around.
Talking place and. People coming in.
But this home that you see here
yeah.
was one of the finest homes in Dolan. It was a very big home, very modern.
How big was it?
It had four big bedrooms upstairs and one bedroom downstairs, and it had two bathrooms in it, which was most unusual. And it had a big porch in the back, all enclosed, glass enclosed porch, and it had a big garage in the back. And it had its own gas pump, and we had our own driveway all the way
what
on it.
What kind
through.
Of car did you have?
We had a Saxon.
God.
Yeah, so I know. And my dad never had a good car. He was always trading it for something, you know. Somebody would owe him some money, and he'd they'd trade him in a car or something.
And
then we had a Ford. We always had Ford, but we had sort of two cars. We had a big Saxon touring car, and then we had a Ford Model T two-door sedan. And I used to polish that car, boy, let me tell you, with Semdek. Semdek is just it's a polishing oil for furniture, but it's just an oil. Of course, then all the dust would accumulate on it, but I'd have it all shined up. And then we had a rack on the side, so when we traveled, we could put our suitcases on the running board. And my Airedale dog that you've got a picture of here, he used to jump right up on the side of that car, right up by the motor and the front fender, and he just in there, and we go just lick just as fast as that car go, and that dog is be looking right out into the wind. If I'd slam on the brakes, he'd go tumbling on over. But this house was a beautiful home.
Do you have much land around it, or
yes, a big yard, and there's a big yard right off over here, and then there was a big garden and a lot of we used to have apple trees and plum trees and cherry trees behind. It was a beautiful home. My father had to sell that home. I remember this in 1926 when the banks closed. And the first time I ever saw my mother and father both cry. And I knew something terrible had happened. I came home after school one night, and Mom and Daddy were out in the orchard and talking to a man by the name of Mr. Herr. His name was Ben Herr, believe it or not.
H-U-R?
I think it was H-U-R, H-E-R-R, I can't remember. But Ben Herr, I think H-U-R. He was a farmer, and a well-to-do farmer. And Dad had lost all the money in the bank, and he had bills to pay in the store. And he was just desperate. And this home meant everything to my mother. She loved this home. I can still see that great big kitchen, that beautiful big back porch, all glassed in, you know, like a lot of modern houses now. And then you see this was all a screen porch up here, you see. And you see here we used to have vines and stuff coming up the, you know.
Who's that with you?
That's my little sister. That was my sister Frances. That's my brother
Ralph.
Ralph,
yeah.
And here was our bedroom right up here. Ralph's and mine, and here was Mom's and Dad's, and you can see there's quite a big space.
Yeah,
it was a big room.
Right.
Then we rented out a room there to the man that worked in the drugstore, and a nice big closet, the big attic, and a lovely big bathroom. You know, I can still see it was tiled bathroom, and for a little town, that was something.
Yeah.
Well, Dad sold all of that property in 1926 for $6,000.
You were about what about?
And
what
I was then 15, about 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I'd come home from high school, and Dad and Mom were out there, and the mom was, the tears are running down her face, and she was crying, and Dad had his arm around Mom, and he had some tears on his cheek. And I asked afterwards what was wrong, and Dad said, "Well, son, I've got to get some money. I have to sell the house." And the man had the money, and he bought our house. And I never felt good about it since. It's the funniest thing. I just loved that home. I can remember my brother Ralph one time. He was always a rascal. He was out putting up the storm windows in the back. You know, they had a porch just like this porch here, only a flat roof in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And Mama wouldn't bring in the stepladder quick enough. And he was always snorting around. He said, "If you don't hurry up and bring that stepladder, I'm going to jump right off the porch." And by God, he did. Because Mama didn't get it there fast enough. Then we had behind this garage, we had this big driveway coming on in. Then there was a gas pump that you could get. We had our own gas tank, and we had a garage big enough for two cars. And then behind it was another little place that we made into a chicken coop. And my grandfather gave me chickens. And when I wouldn't take care
of grandfather, which side?
Mama's side.
Right.
When I wouldn't take care of the chickens, why then my mother had given them to my brother Ralph. And then when he wouldn't clean the chicken house, she'd give them back to me. Well, I remember when we went out of the chicken business, the time we went out, they were my chickens, and I had to crate them all up, and I took them down to the poultry house, and Beck, B-E-C-K, Beck's Poultry House, and I went on down there, and when we weighed them up, I'd forgotten how much they come to, and the fellow said, "Who shall we make the check out? To whom shall we make out the check?" And my brother said, "Make it out to me." And here they were my chickens, but he was older than I was, and he always, and you know, you can see here, he'd say, "If you don't shut up, I'll beat you up," or something like that. And he just plain took my money. And I was so mad at him. So I went home and I gathered up all the old tires and bottles and everything I could. And I went down and sold all that stuff to a junk dealer when he didn't know. So I'd have a little money for myself. But I remember this. Now look at that nice big, you talk about a big picture window.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
There. Yeah. It was a beautiful home. Hardwood, lovely. And it's still there right now. And I'll go see that house. And right across the street was the banker's home.
Where'd you move to?
We moved from there to a little house down way down the street that wasn't much of a house. And then we had a third house later on.
Yeah.
Each year we got a little poorer.
Yeah.
Things were a little rougher.
But this house.
This house had a furnace in it.
Right. I better turn this over.
Boy, it was a house.
I better turn this over.
Yeah. I could talk about it forever. I got the pneumonia when I was a boy in that home.
This is a new tape recorder for me, so I'm not too...
A Relco.
Why don't you bring it out?
You have to push the sides in here.
You gotta know these things.
That's both. It
should come out. That's what I thought you did, man. These are the new
must be a
new shape better. With it if it doesn't...
Wait a minute.
Maybe.
Well, wait a second. Supposed to be better?
The card lock. What does that do?
Or maybe you push this out. Yeah, that'll open it, won't it? There we go. You just push this down. That's tricky, yes.
Now, all right. That's right. Now you turn it over.
All right. That's the baby. Okay. All right. Now we're in business again. Okay. Now we're right back in business.
Well, I was going to say that in 1918, when they had the terrible influenza epidemic, everybody in our town was ill, practically. Many people died. And my father was working day and night at the drugstore, and he had the flu, and mother had the flu. I was the last one to get it, and I was the first one to get over it. And everybody was sick, and nobody was around hardly. People tried to help each other. And I remember one of our neighbors down the street, Mr. Wilkins, died of the flu. And I got outside, and I got cold, and I got the pneumonia. And I came very close to dying. In fact, they had given me up for dead. And a salesman came through from Park Davis and Company, and he had what they call pneumococcus antigen, which is just something new that they had thought they'd perfected. And I remember that Mother told me that they'd had the minister over, that I was unconscious, and it was all done. They were just kind of consoling the family that this little boy was going to be through. And my father got a hold of this man, this salesman. And even though the fellow had been carrying that pneumococcus antigen around in his briefcase or suitcase, and most likely it wasn't any good, they came out and they injected me with it. And in the day, my fever broke. And I maybe would have anyway, you don't know. But I've never forgotten that. and I recovered, needless to say. But I had pleurisy for at least 15 years after that. I actually had all, I even now, once in a while, get a little trace of it. The pleura of your lungs, and it scarred my lungs very badly.
How old were you here before we leave this?
This picture here, I was about 6 years of age,
six
I'd
years,
say.
Right.
That's Ralph, Francis, and myself.
Right.
Now here we are, and that's my dog, Rex. That dog used to go every place with me. He went to school with me, he went to church with me, and every time the church bells would ring, we'd go, and then the siren, we had a very good local fire department, and he'd always, the siren would make hurt his ears, and he was a terrific fighter, and he had a sense of property. He knew exactly where his property line was. Dogs have that sense, and any dog that'd come on there, he'd clean them up. He was really a good one.
How long did you have? When did
well,
you get
dog,
that dog?
That dog died when we moved to Huron, about 1934 or 5.
Was
he was 14 or 15 years old, and I remember he couldn't hold his water after a while. He'd get you know, and he knew that he was. I'll never forget when the truck came to pick him up. He knew he was going away. God, I just hated to see that poor old dog go. He was just like a family.
Sort of a mixed.
He was just a real good Airedale. I got him. I don't remember how I got him, but by golly, he was great. I used to dip him in Creosote dip, one part, to get the fleas off me, you know, and kind of he'd get skin trouble of some kind. He got run over and he was hurt. He fought a badger one time and killed a badger. That's quite a.
Yes,
and that badger took big hunks of flesh off me.
I think so.
I love that old dog. He used to go to Sunday school and sit under the church steps for me till I'd come out. Yes, sir. One of the other things I used to do when I was a kid, I always had a lot of imagination. I had a big erector set. I used to build all kinds of things with the erector set.
Yes, sir.
Every conceivable. You
remember
those old erector
yes,
sets? And I had
yes,
my own
had
chemistry
it.
Set. And I had a little. There was a little shed. And I'd mix up gunpowder and I'd fix up all kinds of things. I had my
well, you had a drugstore. You had,
yes.
You had chemicals.
Yes, I did, and I had a wonderful chemistry set. I used to think I was going to be a great chemist.
Was that your boyhood?
Yes, that's what I
was. Ambition,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Primarily, to be. I had a lot of ambitions. I was a hunter, and I was a chemist. And my father told me I was going to be a pianist. He used to get me to practice the piano, and gave me a phonograph if I did it, and all that sort of business. He was a great one. Now this is in the high school in Doland. Coming back to that high school, I used to think that was a big high school. When I went back, it looked awfully small.
How many kids were there?
There were very few, about less than 100 in high school. There were only 13 in my graduating class, as I recall.
13.
Mm-hmm. But I played on the football team. I played basketball and football, and I was on the track team. I was on the debate team.
You were in
I was
the band, too, weren't you?
In the band, and I was.
What'd you play in the band?
The baritone horn.
Baritone horn, yeah.
And then I was in all the high school plays 4 years in a row.
Really? What'd you. What kind
of
plays?
You know, the Captain Applejack and one of them, and the. Oh, gosh, I can't remember them all now. No, they were regular plays. We used to just go down and put them on in the main theater downtown and make money.
Oh.
We sold the tickets in Humphrey's Drugstore. And I can still see that box. It was about this big. Stand up here. And then we had an opera house, you know, with a balcony in it, you know. Every town had an opera house.
Yes.
Not a theater, they didn't call it. They called it an opera house.
Yes.
Hey, isn't that awful? There you got it. All right, now this is a... This is a picture here at when I was at Doland, I think at the time of 1964 campaign. That's Ione Hunt. And back there is Jean Bernath, who was my inspector of detectives when I was mayor.
Let me see.
She is National Committee. Oh, now that isn't my teacher. Let me see. Oh, that is. That's not Ione Hunt. That is one of my teachers.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's right.
I thought
we
were going to tear that picture
out. I think that was Bernice Evans, if I'm not mistaken. Her name is Webb now. She lives at Aberdeen. Yes, I think that's who it is. I'm sure that is, unless that's Olive Doty. But I think it's Bernice Webb. There, did you ever show him the article that was written by Mrs. Doty up in Doland?
I don't think so.
No, I never saw
about Hubert
that.
Humphrey? Well, there's a wonderful article that appeared in...
I'll get it. It's in a pile of stuff I have at the office.
Yeah. Oh,
from
good.
Julie.
Yeah, it's a dandy one.
Good.
Now, this is our high school gym. That was built in the year that I was a senior in high school. I was on the basketball team when that...
What did you like to play most? Did you have a favorite sport? Did you?
I liked everything.
Like
I used to box. I did a lot of boxing. And I was a skinny fellow, so I'd train all the time. And I boxed a great deal from the day I was 8 years old until I was 20. I was pretty good at boxing. I whipped my own brother a couple of times after. The main reason I was trying to do it at the time, I wanted
for
to
the
get
chickens,
good.
Probably.
Well, you know, because I just wanted to square off with him. And he and I became, you know, such good buddies after he found out who ran the shop. But I boxed a great deal. In our town, as kids, you didn't have too much to do. I remember that all the country kids that come to town, we'd always have to take them over to Sherwood's barn and have a fight. Well, you had to level them off and, you know, let them know whether they were really men or chicken. And that always took place every year. Any new kid come to school, we'd go over there and have a couple of fist fights, kind of have it out. And that sort of gets you shaped up as to where your standing was. Now, that isn't very modern, I know, but that's the way it happened. But I was on the football team. I played guard, and I played end. I even played halfback one time. I broke my ankle. We had a good team. We had a lot of spirit. We were all brought up to be competitive. It was a disgrace to lose. I never had much of this business about that it didn't make any difference whether you won or lost. You're supposed to win.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to win. This coach right here, this fellow here, he taught you how to win. That's our championship basketball team.
What'd you play in the basketball team?
Forward.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very good team, and I was first string player as a senior. Second, I was a substitute, part-time first string as a junior. We won the district championship. We went to the regional tourney. We were... these two young fellows here are right here in Wanamon, Washington now. McNichol, General McNichol, out here at the Air Force. Another one's in Oklahoma. They're identical twins. One of them there, you see, was the manager of the team. The other one was just... we only had eight. We didn't have enough boys. But we took on all the big ones. We played Watertown and Aberdeen and Sioux Falls and Huron, all those big towns, and we'd give them a whipping. Like my wife came from Huron. I always, you know, tell her that we... this little town was...
Hart didn't play there.
No, he didn't play on the team. He was on the debate team with me. But I was on the debate team 4 years.
Well, tell me about the debate team, because that's kind of important.
This school, even today, has winning debate teams. They won the state tournament again last year. We always used to win the regional and district, and I went to the state debate tournament twice where we were up in the semifinals and finals. Little town. It's a tradition. You were taught the art of debate, forensics. And I did that when I went to the university. I debated against the Oxford team down at Louisiana State University when they needed somebody to take those Englishmen on. We cleaned them. And I debated on the freshman team at the University of Minnesota. I debated on the team there 3 years at the university, never lost a debate. And our University of Minnesota Big Ten. So that's just the way it was, you know, you just did it. But again, you were taught that you were supposed to do well. There was none of this business about the excusing that you weren't supposed to be.
Was your father like that too? Was he a good talker?
Yes, the main thing, you were taught that you were supposed to succeed. You know, that's interesting. I mean, I can't quite understand people nowadays. But we were always taught that you were supposed to win and succeed. Not just win so much as succeed. But in athletics, you were supposed to win. Debate, you're supposed to win. I won the oratorical contest when I was in high school. District oratorical contest.
You don't remember what the subject was?
I remember it was about the Battle of the Marne.
Battle of the Marne.
Yeah, I forgot now who, some oration that I memorized. I had to memorize it. But I won it down at Huron, South Dakota at the District Oratorical Championship. And I went to the regional oratorical. I don't remember. I think I got second place in the region. But I didn't have any coach or anything. We never had a physical. You know, nobody ever gave you a physical exam. You're warm, you played football. You know, and all that's kind of nonsense. We didn't really get good uniforms till this year. You can see that we had nice uniforms and we got sweatsuits. But this guy, this coach, this is Ray White, one of the best men I ever knew from Coe College. I don't know where he is now, but he taught you that you were supposed to win. And you were supposed to train. You were supposed to be good. And very candidly, if you didn't make a good tackle, he'd just tell you you're yellow. You're just a damn yellow dog. You're just a coward. And by God, I would have died rather than have somebody tell me that. You know, and he just, and so you just, it was a kind of a tough way of doing it with people. But we were all country kids, and there wasn't much of this modern psychology around there. And I remember that we used to get a prize for making the best tackle. And I, you know, just, I can still feel hurt, when, you know, I mean, physical, because I was very thin and skinny. And a lot of players were much better than I was. I was sort of a punching bag for a couple of years until I was a junior. Then I was a little stronger. I weighed 90 pounds when I was a freshman. I weighed about 125 pounds when I was a sophomore, and about 135 when I was a senior, as a junior and senior. But I played on the football team. I played on the basketball team. I ran a half mile on the track team. I won my medal. I was on the debate team. I was in the high school play, and I was in the band. And I was valedictorian. You're supposed to win and do it all. You're just supposed to do it. That's all. Nobody ever said you weren't supposed to do it. I never wanted to get bad grades for fear my dad would be angry with me. Now, here was my scout troop.
Tell me more about the scouts and the scout troop.
I started the scout troop in Huron, South Dakota, after we'd moved to Huron in 1930.
No, I mean before that, when you were still a scout.
Well, I was just a boy scout with the Reverend Albert Hart.
Were there many kids in the troop?
Oh, sure.
What did you do?
You
went camping?
Sure, we went camping. We had an old Ford truck with a chain drive on it. And I remember one time we went up to Enemy Swim, a lake in South Dakota. There weren't many lakes in South Dakota. And it was raining all the time. And Reverend Albert Hart would say, "It's just over the hill." And we'd push that truck up there. And there was a fellow by the name of Ole Langland. He used to get underneath there, and he was the, sort of the town rascal. But I learned that the worse the rascal, the more leadership he has, most likely. Because this Ole was the only one that had the guts to get under the truck and put the chain on and take the risk of having his fingers ground up in the chain drive when the truck was trying to go up the hill. And we'd push that truck up over one hill after another, and finally we got up to Enemy Swim. And it was raining, and so we just climbed under the tarpon, all of us, and went to bed, rain or no rain.
Enemy Swim, E-N-E-M-Y.
Enemy Swim. It's where Indians swam across the lake, and they call it Enemy Swim. And we stayed up there for a week or so, and we cooked our own food, and we used to have overnight camps, camp outs. I was a scout for 3 years, I think, in Doland.
Did you good?
Oh, I loved it. Good gosh, yes, it was great. We used to meet in the Methodist Church basement. Had lousy old uniforms. We didn't have any modern things.
But you stayed with it, and you were a scoutmaster.
Then later on, afterwards, when I came back to Huron, South Dakota, after I'd been in college.
What was the highest rank you got to?
I was a Life Scout.
Yeah, my son's a Life Scout.
Yeah. I love scouting, and I had a wonderful troop in Huron. This was from 1931 to 1937, 6 years. Troop number 6. I had, if not the best, I would say one of the best troops in that part of the country. I took a lot of the boys that gotten in trouble, and they were paroled to us, or the juvenile judge would send them to me. And I had 3 boys that had robbed the post office, that they had been paroled to my father. I gave most of those boys jobs in the drugstore, working part-time. And they were real buddies, real kids, you know, and they were the best, toughest little guys in that town of about 9,000 then. It got to be about 8,000 or 9,000. And I remember we'd have these camperees and these jamborees, and I'd tell all my kids I'd come down there, you know, and they'd just be so wild. And I'd say, "All right, now you fellows all shape up." Nobody could have a new uniform, because we didn't want to have anybody, any social cleavage. So you had to have used pieces. But we all were uniformed. And this fellow here, Dewey Van Dyke, his boy was a scout, drowned, by the way. Dewey and Hazel. Dewey was one of my closest friends in Huron, and his wife Hazel still lives there. And Dewey was the chairman of my scout committee. I was the scout master. And Lynn LeCraft, his friend, these were both older than I.
How old were you there?
I was there about 22. Mm-hmm. 22 years of age. Dewey was in World War I. I used to listen to his tales about World War I. And Lynn LeCraft was his buddy. Lynn LeCraft's son was in my troop, as was his Dewey son. Dewey's son drowned in a creek, got caught up in weeds. Lynn LeCraft's son was an Eagle Scout, Kendall LeCraft, one of the finest young men I ever knew in my life. He was shot down in World War II as a pilot. What a tragedy. Wonderful boy. I had 6 Eagles in that troop. We won the President's Award 3 years out of 6, which is a high award for outstanding work in scouting. And we just clean them up at every jamboree. I'd tell those kids, now you guys get in there and let's win. And they'd say, oh, don't worry, Humphrey, we'll do it, you know. And they'd just be so lackadaisical, you know. I'd have such a time with them. Then they'd go over there and they were just like a house of fire, you know, just clean them out and everything.
Just like your staff.
Yeah, that's right. And they were wonderful. And Muriel used to cook for them, and they'd cook beans and hamburgers. And then we earned money from paper sales for our scout equipment, and we had our own big, all of our cooking equipment and all that sort of thing. But it was during the Depression. The first meeting of that scout troop was held in the vestry, in the doorway of the Methodist church. They didn't even open the building for us. And it was in a dust storm. There were 6 boys. The first time that when we tried to get the church heated, they didn't have enough money to heat the church. The boys and myself put on a bean feed for the parents and invited the parents to the church basement, and it was about 20 below zero.
Okay.
And they let them freeze. And next Sunday I got heat. That's where we used to come down there. We'd all be in our heavy clothes because we had a gymnasium in the church, but no heat. So the only way we get heat is to invite the parents of the boys and get them freeze with us. They all got a little cold, and then we got heat.
Well, listen to that letter.
Now, this is the letter. I went down to... I think this is 1936, if I'm not mistaken.
I think the postmark says.
Yeah. Yes, I went to Washington to see my sister Frances graduate. And I used to write Muriel a great deal. And while I was here, I wrote her a lot of letters. And I remember going over to the Capitol. I used to go up every day. Roosevelt is a Superman. His speech last night surely baffled the Republicans. In fact, they're lost in a sea of uncertainty as to how to attack him. Ah, boy, that's right. Washington, D.C. thrills me to my very fingertips, and it still does. I simply revel in being with delight in this realm of politics and government. I hope my dream comes true. I'm going to try anyhow, but first I shall prepare myself for the task by reading and thinking, always as a liberal. I wish some of these fellows would see that now.
Yeah.
They will now.
But that, I never forgotten that. I wanted to come to Congress so badly. And I really decided to go back to the university after being in South Dakota with my father, after I had finished my pharmacy training. I decided to come back to the university for one reason. I watched the people in politics at home, and I thought, if I just get to learn a little more, I know I could do it. I liked all these people that my dad knew and all the local politicals, but they didn't know very much. I mean, they had no information.
What's more is
they didn't seem to, you know, the things that Roosevelt was talking about were not always well articulated by these people. They were good people, very good people, but it seemed to me that if I knew something more about economics, and if I would read more about political history and political philosophy, that I felt that I would be able to do it. I had already been a young Democrat and chairman of the Young Democrats in my county. My father had been elected to the state legislature. He'd, of course, been mayor of his city, town, and councilman. And I was brought up... By the way, you see that? That's my Uncle Harry's home.
Oh.
I was staying out at his place, and I'd write letters to Muriel every night when I'd be out there. I remember one time I got up to Waldorf Astoria Hotel, New York, and I went in, sat down in the Waldorf Astoria and wrote her a letter on that stationery, too. And then the next year, she and I were back here together.
Well, tell me about when you first met her, before we go into this.
Well, I met Muriel at a college dance in Huron. She was attending Huron College, a small private school.
And you had been at the University of Minnesota and come back.
I'd been there for a year.